In this episode of the Smart Community Podcast, I have a brilliant chat with Zahir Alam. Zahir is an urban strategist for the Port Louis Development Initiative, where he contributed to the drafting of a national regeneration scheme aimed at economically incentivizing urban regeneration. The scheme was successfully adopted by the government of Mauritius in the national budget of 2018-2019. In this episode, we discuss Zahir's background as an urban strategist and his interest in looking at how to regenerate cities. Zahir tells us how he thinks Mauritius is currently embracing smart concepts and the unique way they are encouraging urban regeneration projects. We talk about the importance of democratizing not only access to data, but also knowledge of data to create more sustainable, more resilient smart cities, as well as the challenges of being a small developing state facing the realities of mitigating climate change problems without the economic power to influence the global climate change conversation. Zahir then tells us some of the key things that need to be considered in urban regeneration and smart cities projects in developing nations to avoid gentrification, and why Westerners need to properly understand the context and priorities of different African places before prescribing smart solutions. We finish our chat discussing the emerging trends of autonomous cities and biotechnology in cities. As always, we hope you enjoy listening to this episode as much as we enjoyed making it.
Welcome to the Smart Community. Smart regions, smart towns, and smart cities. It's where we live, work, and play. With smart communities, the future starts today. Big data, smart mobility, emerging trends galore. The Smart Community Podcast is what you're looking for.
Hello, Zahir. How are you today?
Hi, Zoe. Yeah, good. Thanks. Thanks for having me.
No, thank you so much for coming onto the podcast.
Yeah, thanks to you.
Let's jump straight in. And can you tell us about your background and what you're passionate about?
Yes, so I'm based in Mauritius. I work as an urban strategist. My interest is looking at how to regenerate cities from both an economic and societal standpoint. And on this, we've been pulled on the smart cities concept and how to redefine the concept to better include dimensions of society and economy.
Excellent. I love that redefinition aspect. So let's dive into that a little bit later. But first of all, let's go to what sparked your interest in this kind of smart city, smart community concept.
Yeah, for us, in 2014, the government of Mauritius adopted the Smart Cities Initiative. And I was an urban planner for the government of Mauritius to help define what it means and how to channel investment into the concept. So with Guy Tansiou, who was the chair of the initiative, he's the past president of the International Union of Architects. So together with him, we devised the framework for the government of Mauritius. And we were tasked with a challenging assignment to help, one, create understanding what does it mean, and second, how do we encourage investment through the scheme to help in regenerate not only the urban environment around those areas, but also the country as a whole.
Excellent. So what is a smart city to you?
Yeah, so this is a really complex question because, you know, there's no global, globally agreeable definition of what smart city is. And usually if you say smart city, then people will say, what is the opposite of a smart city? Is it a dump city? Nobody wants a dump city. So yeah, it's a very intelligent branding perspective. And it can be quite challenging as well, because if we need to be honest about it, smart cities mainly branded by large ICT corporations, because for us, it's a market to sell products. And usually doing something smart doesn't mean doing something that has to be technologically inclined. It just probably means doing something which is more, intelligent in planning. So without actually the need for technology. So a smart city for us in this sense would be this, to redefine design processes, encourage technology, yes, but not as a primary means of the concept.
Yeah, that's what I think about as well. It's more like a framework of changing the way we think. So, you know, thinking about how we did it in the past and yes, learn and, you know, take those experiences, but actually redefine what we want it to look like in the future, which is what you were talking about.
Yeah.
So why do you think that this smart city concept is so important?
Well, I think it's a evolutionary aspect of it because, you know, the internet has been there since only 20, 25 years ago, and now we can't live without the internet. And everything is becoming technologically inclined. We are turned towards digital sources of innovation, digital solutions. And cities is like organically adopting this trend. So while a few years ago we were talking about smart city being the next innovation in cities, today it's very much real. And I do think that more cities around the world will be adopting those solutions, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they will be smart in the sense that solutions are branded smart, but I think it will be an integral part of the fabric. But now we just need to know how do we integrate those solutions to really render an intelligent fabric, not only for ICT corporations to be richer and to gain more monopoly on the market, but also on how people in the general sense of the population, and how do we use those technologies to democratize the economic landscape and achieve higher inclusivity.
So how do you think Mauritius is currently embracing this concept?
For us, we did it quite, I would say, an innovative framework. In 2014, the government announced that they were turning towards a smart city concept. In 2015, government of Mauritius, through the national budget, announced a series of incentives, the fiscal incentives for land developers to pursue smart cities. And for that, they said if you're tagging your development as being smart, then you need to have not only technological outputs, technological solutions like smart parking and so on, but also have a healthy balance, work, live and play. Because for us, if we are creating a, let's say, the next cyber city, it doesn't make sense if it just stands alone and out in the middle of nowhere. It has to have the dimensions where people can live, can have entertainment values there, so we can create an ecosystem. But then by doing this, how's it called? Government was encouraging new cities, emerging cities, which was not, it wasn't sustainable in the sense, because then we will be encouraging people to move out from existing cities towards new smart cities. Then what happens to existing cities? It falls in a state of urban decay because we not only move people, but we're also moving investment, because then businesses are interested in brand new buildings into those emerging cities. Then we proposed to government in last year, to adopt a new scheme called an urban regeneration scheme, which government adopted. Now, existing cities can be eligible to the existing smart cities fiscal package of incentives. So let's say if a group of developers are interested to renovate buildings in existing fabrics or do new developments in existing cities, they are eligible to the same fiscal measures than a smart city would get. So this is kind of our sense to, inclusively encourage smart city development around the island. And I think this is quite unique in the way we did it.
Mm-hmm. So it's not just encouraging new things, but actually how do we make the...
To regenerate.
Yeah, regenerate.
And in this sense, just for the audience, it's quite important that we do it this way, because when we do it, when we encourage fiscally development, usually it is only one or two developers that get those fiscal benefits. And we do not democratize the economic landscape. But by expanding these fiscal mechanisms to a larger audience, to the existing city, we do not only benefit the few, but actually everybody who is a landowner, who is an operator in the city, would get access to those fiscal mechanisms.
What other kind of programs and things have the government been doing in this space?
So this one is still very new. The smart city, we now have like a dozen who has been going through the process for new smart city developments, but now we are focusing on the urban regeneration aspect of it, smart urban regeneration. And now the challenges for existing cities is like, let's say for an urban development for a new city, you can just have one developer because he's the sole owner of the land. But for existing cities, you'll have hundreds of landowners. Then it becomes more challenging on how to structure your business plan, for example. Because some landowners may be asset rich, but they are cash poor. Then how do we encourage urban redevelopment in this sense if we don't have money to do it? Now we are looking at a real estate investment trust on how we can bring in the private sector large funds to invest into those kinds of regeneration processes. in this sense, it's quite intelligent in the way the government adopted this platform, because, you know, Mauritius is part of Africa, and we have this all around Africa, the problem, because our infrastructures are coming to term, and we don't have the financial capacity to invest into infrastructure. For example, instead of just waiting for government to come and repair road, now with the urban regeneration scheme, the private sector can repair the road and recoup that investment on the income tax. So for us, this is an intelligent approach. It is a smart approach and goes into the smart cities framework.
No, it's really interesting. And I'm keen to hear your thoughts about, you know, given your background, how you've incorporated the smart city approach with, you know, sustainability and climate change and those type of things.
Yeah, for me, and the interesting thing about the, how's it called, the advent of technology and being a small and developing state and being sensible to the issue of climate change, we have now a wealth of access of data gathered from Internet of Things all around the city. So what do we do with that data? This is one key aspect. And this is, again, a difficult question, because right now today, most of those data are gathered by large ICT corporations, which do not particularly share data, in an open source fashion to everybody. So those data are limited and operate in silos within particular corporations, within particular companies, and very seldomly are seen to being shared among the same companies and, in the larger sense, shared with governments as well. So this can be quite challenging. And if we really want to tap into the potential of those big data, encourage democratization for not economic gains, but also democratization of knowledge of data, then we need to open it. And it is particularly important for in respect to climate change, because then we can have smaller providers, people in general, scientists, dwell into those data, manipulate those data to create a better understanding on how our cities can be rendered more resilient.
I think resilience is so key in this space. And I was talking to somebody earlier this month about, you know, resilience. It's not just about how do we bounce back from, say, an emergency or something that happens, but then how do we continually build so that when those emergencies happen, we just don't get quite as hard hit as well. So the bouncing back is smaller because we only nick, because we're already building that resilience as we're going. So it's not just about how do we bounce back when something's happening, but how do we continue to build so it doesn't shake us as much?
Yeah, but I think it's also resilience in this case would also mean how we kind of influence the debate to benefit us and benefit the global, how's it called, the global population. Because in this case, in our case, being a small and developing state, and in the case being an African state, it's quite challenging because we don't have the economic power to encourage global debates on climate change. But we are on the front line of climate change, and resilience is very, very important to us. And additionally, we don't have the financial capacity to invest into very expensive climate change mitigation problems. So it's not very fair. They say we contribute the less, but we pay the most. And in this case, we also don't have the financial means to address those challenges. But then why do we need, are we expected to invest the most in resilience for the safeguarding of our communities? So it's a very sensible discussion to have, very difficult questions to ask.
Mm-hmm. And that's the thing, we are all part of this global community now. And yeah, I think that what I guess the internet and, you know, smart cities, smart communities has opened up is this online global community, so we can actually start to have some of these sensible conversations, and hopefully in a way that we can start influencing things, even if we have people from all different countries, some are more affected than others, but if we can actually work together to build that global resilience, then, you know, really prioritize the communities that are really feeling it. It's definitely an interesting global conversation that we need to continue to have without the polarization, because we need all voices. We need really, you know, we need the powerful voices involved so that we can actually, you know, shift some of these things. But then we need everyone's voice, that particularly communities that are getting hit with it the worst. So then people actually know what's what, I guess, and the facts and what's actually happening. I think that's really important.
Yeah, and for this, I think open knowledge and open sharing would be really important. And this is what is lacking in smart cities and smart communities around the world. We need peer-to-peer sharing, peer-to-peer communities where those data can be readily available. And then we need platforms where those data, not only from particular fields are shared, but across its like multidisciplinary approach to data analysis, data sharing, and then only we can achieve, increase in resilience and net resilience on the climate change, but also resilience talking about how to build a more inclusive, more equitable economic landscape for communities around the world.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. Like resilience has to be all of those things and more so we can continue to be sustainable as communities. Yeah. Okay. Well, we've talked a little bit about what you've been working on, but I'd like to, let's dive a bit deeper into that. So tell us about some of the other projects and things that you're currently working on.
I also do, I'm a consultant for a few projects across the African landscape. I work in Benin, in Burkina Faso. We do projects in Madagascar, in Ghana, and a few other countries. Basically, we do urban regeneration projects. So we go in under the request of governments, ministers, presidents, and then we evaluate where the countries are and just to set the benchmarks and then have conversations with them to understand the economic and governmental agendas on where they want to go and then set a short-term plan for them to transition into this. And for us, our expertise at this moment we've been building is not only on how to do that through smart cities, because, for African companies, just having the word smart city there means also a branding opportunity because they want to show that they are leapfrogging. So having this there, just we use it as a branding opportunity. But the underlying foundation is that we approach it through fiscal mechanisms, because those countries, those localities do not have the economic potential to regenerate the urban fabric. So we need to encourage the private sector to jump in, and we need to encourage international organizations to set foot into those jurisdictions. So we use fiscal mechanisms to catalyze investment into those areas, but catalyze investment in line with smart cities, smart communities, and in line with the economic agendas of those government. So the way we pitch it is it is a win for the government, because ultimately they do achieve the economic agendas in the short and long term, but also a win for the private sector, because they will not invest into governmental agendas without gaining anything in return. So what do they get in return? We say, if you invest into this and that, you get income tax rebates on this and that for how long, you get accelerated depreciations on your asset, et cetera, et cetera. And by doing this, the government wins, the private sector wins. And who is the ultimate beneficiary? It is the citizens, the residents of those areas, because ultimately then we build a higher livability for them. They are more happy, they're safer, more inclusive communities.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the key things that you really need to consider when working in this space? Obviously, it must be a very kind of, sensitive area where we're looking at, where people live and regenerating those things and making sure that, people, if they're moving in different places, and how do you ensure that everyone's taken care of in that space?
We've been to some really challenging places. I remember being in Benin. I love Benin. Benin is a country of voodoo, black magic. And it's one of the poorest countries in the world. And when we go there, we walk in the slums. And, it's like when we talk about the challenges of climate change, for developed countries, it's like people are demanding action for climate change, and it's a top priority agenda. But when you go there, like then you understand, it's like for them, climate change is like way back on the ladder, because they need decent housing, they need proper food, they need this, they need that, just to be able to survive every day. And then we can talk about the climate change agendas. So when we go to those communities and we see the priority actions, really, we do reevaluate our own agendas and the agendas of the government. And also by proposing actions, we do ensure, because we know that for us, when we go there, we know this climate change issue is a debate for the global community. So we ensure that those are also included, but also included by providing housing, by providing food, by providing shelter and inclusive economic landscape and so on. And for us, when we go there, for example, a smart solution doesn't mean technology, because when we go there, we actually do not need any technology, we need housing. Technology will not help those people to gain a better lifestyle if they can't have shelter, if they can't have food, And in some cases, our urban regeneration doesn't involve technology at all. It just involves a restructuring of those of their household, of their frameworks for housing development. And that's it. And how to more efficiently adopt waste. Because, for example, in Benin, only 35% of the waste is collected in the city. The rest is just thrown around the city or thrown in the river. So, for example, one of our proposed approaches was how to collect the waste, sort, recycle into housing blocks and build houses at the end. And that was one of, let's say, our smart solution. No need for technology at all, because they don't really need the technology. They just need a decent living solution.
Well, it's like the basic foundations. We need that first. We need to build that first. And then you obviously will be thinking about, okay, well, once we have this, then we can do this. But we really need to focus on, I guess, the basic fundamental layer first, which is really important because, yeah, you, like you said, you know, you can give everyone smartphones, but if they don't have a house or a shelter, then that's not very useful.
Yeah. And I think, you know, this discussion is lacking for a lot of, let's say, I read a lot on the topic of smart cities. And when we say African is technology, African is this, African is that. And it's usually the narrative that people say without actually knowing the context. Because in some cases, well, like they're doing wonderful things, you know, without technology. And we do agree that technology has the potential to do incredible things. But then in some cases, technology is not a priority. And that's the issue, I would say, many not only many Westerners, but many people who are not acknowledged with the situation. So I would really encourage people to know to go to this context, to experience this, to interact with the people. Then they would actually understand not only they're very lucky to live in those different areas, but to really understand the priorities of those people and how it can really relate to the debate on technology in this case and what it really all means to be intelligent and to be smart.
No, I totally agree. I want to have more and more conversations about is that, like you said, the smart city, it's a brand and, you know, we need that for the marketing and all these type of things and attracting, like those things are still important because you need to be able to attract that financial benefits and all those type of things in the private sector, like you said, but you need to look underneath that, which is the substance, which is the real people. And yeah, the people that don't have access now to clean water and food and those type of things, but not going in with, you know, a Western hat on and going, oh, well, you definitely need this, this and this, actually working with them and designing it with them and asking them what's important to them. I think that's so important.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's talk about integration in this space. And obviously you'd have to do a lot of it, integrating across different governments, different sectors, different disciplines, the community. How do you think we can do that integration piece better?
You know, from what I've experienced, it's the challenge is different because governments can go ahead and they're very good at that implementation of an agenda, not only political agenda, but also from terms of legislation. So you, let's say you have your legislation here. What does it mean to be a smart city? What incentives do you get in return? And then you have it here. But then the issue is people don't understand what it means. And not only people, but also developers who don't understand what a smart city means. And one issue which there is around the world and smart cities from the developer side is they will see it only as a real estate agenda. They will see it as any other project because they're ultimately gaining more economically from it in the long run. So they only invest just in the case that they would in other real estate projects. So I think the communication side is really important because developers don't really understand it as well. And if they don't understand it, they are the service providers. Then there's a big issue, a big problem. And we will have increased resistance from the population against developers, against the concept as a whole.
And you've worked around the world and studied in a few different places as well. Looking at your global experience, I guess, what are some of the key lessons or the common threads between all around the world that we're talking about in smart cities?
I see one, governments are all very interested into the concept because, you know, it's no longer abstract. 10 years ago, it was very abstract in its essence because one, we didn't have the digital infrastructure laid around the city. But now the digital infrastructure is there and it's becoming increasingly cheap to connect, to tap into those infrastructure and companies are doing that. So it's like, it's no longer abstract. It's very physical, it's real, companies are tapping in. But now the challenge is, how do we really devise partnership agendas between private sector, because they are the ones with the financial capacities, and governments? This is one, really one challenge, because let's say, you know, the case of the safe city concepts, which is an offshoot of the smart city. In the case of the smart city, in the safe city, what happens if governments don't have the financial capacities to invest into those infrastructures? Some turn towards the private sector. But then if the private sector installs those infrastructures for the government through PPP, private partner, public-private partnerships, the private sector then collects the data, but do they have the copyright on those data? Then this is a very tricky and a very gray area, you know? If they do not have the copyright, they only gather for the government. If they transcribe it into graphical form, then they own the copyright for those graphical forms because they graph. Then it's a very gray area as well, you know, because they can monetize and do activities to commercialize those data. And the government doesn't gain from it, then it's not very ethical. But it's all happening right now because technology is moving at different speeds than legislation. And this is one key challenge that we'll be having, and we're actually having.
We have it now, right? And we just need to talk about that more. And for data and privacy, and obviously those things, you know, when you go into, say, these communities, they might not be, you know, top on the agenda because we're talking about things like shelter and, you know, food and those type of things. But it's even nearly more important because they're the most vulnerable people in our society, and we need to protect, you know, their privacy and their data because that can be very valuable. So yeah, it's definitely something we need to keep front of mind, even if it's not, doesn't seem to be top of the priority list.
Yeah, because we know, I mean, they will, those communities will leapfrog really, really fast, and it will just be a matter of decades till this will come on top of their priorities. So better approach it from now, like you said.
Mm-hmm. Okay, what are the emerging trends that people aren't talking about enough?
Yeah, for me, I think there's two really exciting, I mean, exciting for me. I'm writing two books at the moment. One I'm just completing on biotechnology and cities, and the second one on autonomous cities. For me, the issue of autonomous cities will be, is the next evolutionary trend of the smart cities, because today cities can already gather data, big data. I would tend to say that it is not big data today because data collected by different companies do not interact between each other. We don't have a global database because there's a lack of standards on this issue. So companies tend to operate their own databases and monetize from those. But let's say tomorrow we have standardizations and we turn towards open source, open data, centralized databases, then we'll have real big data. And what happens when we can process those data? Will cities, for the sake of increased efficiency and performance, both economically and for, let's say, climate change survival, climate change resilience, will cities be able to act on those data? Will cities be able to automate some processes? And we will tend to say yes, because then it increases performance. But then to what scale will cities be able to act on those data? For example, can cities, if there's a terrorist act, can cities be able to retaliate on another country? Will cities be able to launch nuclear warfare? It sounds very like a scenario from Blade Runner or, you know, those very scientific movies. But we need to ask those difficult questions now because there are ethical imperatives at stake. And to what level will cities be able to govern from data? Because again, we remember cities are for people. And it's quite challenging fabric because we have people from different quarters, different cultural sensibilities, and there are loads of minority groups. So when, you know, you have somebody, the humane person acting, doing a decision for an urban environment, we'll have to cater in the cultural sensibilities of everybody, but will a machine be able to do that? So for the sake of autonomous cities, we need to ask those very, very difficult questions now. Yeah. And I think the second one, if we have time.
Yeah, go.
The second one will be on the use of biotechnology and cities. Because when we talk about smart cities and Internet of Things, we can understand how we can increase the efficiency and performance of cities. And we can understand how it is a wonderful tool to fight climate change, you know, on the grand scale of things and the engineering prospects that it may offer. But also we need to acknowledge that building those Internet of Things devices, those IoT devices, not very sustainable because lots of electronics in there and the batteries, for example. It's a very resource extensive process to build lithium batteries. And in this case, the field of biotechnology can offer incredible prospects. Currently, they are looking at how to, for example, store energy in proteins. And what if tomorrow we can store data in DNA strands? So IoT devices then turn from electronics to, let's say, biological entities or chemical entities. Then it changes how we see things. Because right now, a smart city is a set of interconnected IoT devices. Tomorrow, it could be a set of interconnected organisms. Then does it change our understanding of a city as it is, or does it translate a city as a living organism? Because then it will be able to collect data and to react organically from the data. Right now, I see the trend like this. We are in smart city, we'll move to autonomous cities and then gradually move to living cities, living organisms.
Interesting concept. And so many things to consider in there.
Yeah.
Well, Zahir, it's been so great to chat with you. Thank you so much for coming onto the podcast.
Thank you, Zoe.
I just have one last question. How can people connect with you?
Yes, I am on Facebook, Zahir Alam, and I'm on LinkedIn. You're welcome to come and chat.
Excellent. We'll put the links in the show notes so people can click away and find you. Again, thank you so much. I've really enjoyed our conversation, and I think we need to chat again very soon. I'd love to have another conversation.
Yeah, thanks, Zoe, for having me.
Thank you. Talk soon.
Cheers.
Bye.
Are you looking for an engaging speaker, MC, or facilitator for your next big event? Then we've got you covered. Zoe is a go-to speaker, MC, and conversation facilitator with a difference. She's a master at simplifying the complex and making connections you might never see. Book Zoe for your next event. Email hello@mysmart.community or head over to her speaker page, www.mysmart.community/speaking.
Thanks so much for listening to the Smart Community Podcast. Show notes for this episode and all other episodes are available on our website, mysmart.community/podcast. If you have any questions for us or any of our guests, you can email hello@mysmart.community. You can also find us on the socials. We are on LinkedIn and Twitter @smartcomhq. That's com with 2 M's. If you are enjoying the podcast, please hit subscribe so you never miss an episode. And we would love for you to leave us a rating and review at wherever you listen. This really helps us reach more ears and eyes, so thank you for your support. As always, we hope you enjoyed listening to this episode as much as we enjoyed making it.
The Smart Community Podcast is what you're looking for.